We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land where this case takes place, the Wangal people. We acknowledge their elders past, present and emerging. We also acknowledge that this land was never ceded, always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Motherfuckers, I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Alice.
And this is the Signal 2 podcast.
Welcome.
For another episode. Hi.
Yeah. How you relatively doing? On time.
Relatively. We're only mere hours as opposed to weeks delayed. But yeah, we are here. We are back.
If I don't do it in time, our friends, Brendan and Tom, get very angry they don't have it for their drive down to their farm. Yeah. I always get a message on Thursday or Friday, where's the podcast?
I know.
So we're trying to be better. For them and for you.
Yeah, I know. I remember I used to work with Helen and she would always do it for like Friday morning walk around, like doing the bay walk, that kind of thing, and I'd always cop it on the Monday. So, yes, we are trying our best to keep to a schedule, but life sometimes gets in the way and that's kind of been the case recently. But mm-hmm. we are doing well. We are putting good little boundaries for ourselves.
We are. We're doing well. So, not for like, I feel like that makes us sound like we're in a bad place. We meant boundaries for ourselves.
No, I know what you mean.
In the best of possible ways.
Yeah. Correct. And now we are basking in the glow of this really fucking cool, what do you call this? A neon light. Sign.
Well, we'll do a reel soon and we'll show you. It's pretty awesome.
It says Signal 2 podcast, like we've made it.
Yeah, it's fucking rad. It's so bright that we don't actually have the overhead light on in the room. It's just lit up by our glory.
We totally redid our podcast room and it looks so much better. It looks so much better. So it's such a nice space for us to record in now. Mm. So hopefully that, you know, translates to you guys. But we are back for another episode. Before we get started talking about our case, which I actually have no idea. I think this is the first time ever. So the last episode I think I talked to you about and I said that I, for the first time, you hadn't really given any sort of hints about, oh, can't wait to talk about this. Oh, can't wait. This is the first time that I'm going into this completely blind.
The funny thing is you recommended I do this.
I know, but I recommend I recommend all the cases, but I don't know anything about them. But I've completely forgotten about this, so I'm super excited about it. But before we do, I do want to talk about – there is another podcast. You know, we always say that there are just some truly amazing podcasts around. Like we've – previously I've mentioned Blood on the Tracks. There's the – is it a podcast or an audiobook, Baron Joey Road?
Podcast.
Is that a podcast?
I think so, yeah.
I think it's available on Audible. You know how sometimes they translate? Anyway, there's a new one that's come out and I believe it's been out in the last week or so and it's about Hannah Clark. Now, if you're not familiar with the name Hannah Clark, if you've been in Australia or if you're in Australia, you might remember the case where she and her three young children were the victims of victims of domestic violence from her estranged husband, and the four of them were set alight in their car. And
I remember that very distinctly.
It was just one of those cases where unfortunately we have too many of them, but one of those ones where you think that can't be the case. That's just. Mm. And so this new podcast goes into the details of, you know, obviously the history and talks about Hannah and growing up and took interviews with the family. I think it's Nine News are behind it. And it's just really, I hate to say the word interesting because it seems that kind of makes it sound like it's really interesting. Like it's really traumatic and horrible, but if anything, it's sort of good to hear about, and because one of the things I talk about with domestic violence is this idea of coercive control, which we may not be super familiar with, but it's basically he controlled her and he, you know, that was his way of, that was his form of violence. Mm. And, it, you know, we were talking about this earlier, so you said it's so hard to prove.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Mm. It's like you know it's there, but you can't exactly put. It's one of those things you couldn't describe perfectly because It just, yeah, it's a hard one to.
Yeah, it's you know, you're talking about isolating her from the family or him from the family or, but they do it not because they want to protect the person, the perpetrator, if that makes sense. Mm. So anyway, I've been listening to this. I recommended you do it and you just said, oh, you're not really in the headspace for it. So yeah, totally understand. But I did just want to give a bit of a recommendation to listen to it because I think it's important. I think it's that because yeah, that shit happens every day, unfortunately. And we saw just recently today the Riverview, a 3-year-old child was stabbed. Riverwood, sorry, yes. 3-year-old child was stabbed and the police confirmed it's a domestic violence. And a male was admitted to hospital with self-inflicted stab wounds. So that's obviously developing, we don't know, but the police have confirmed that's domestic violence. So just kind of wanted to talk about those things just to check in on one another, I suppose. Yeah. And because, yeah, shit's happening every day and it really sucks when you hear this and hear these stories.
With all that, we'll post with our bio and stuff like that, we'll post some domestic violence helplines and resources and stuff that you can go to if you are in those situations.
Correct. I know Hannah Clark's, her family have set up a foundation charity in her name and her honour, so we'll link that as well. But yeah, pretty, you know, sorry to start it on that kind of thing, but I just, yeah, wanted to shout out that Hannah story. I just think it's a really important tale to tell and I find it really moving. So if you're interested in Australian true crime and that kind of thing, definitely check it out. Before we go into our episode, I'm just going to go very briefly talking about the whiskey I'll be drinking tonight. I asked you, where did this case take place? And you said New South Wales. So I've gone with the New South Wales distillery. I probably already mentioned it. It's called Jawaja. Really beautiful little distillery out in the Highlands, Southern Highlands of New South Wales. And basically what I'm being on is a kill streak. So the way my little whiskey knowledge for you this evening, anytime a bottle enters into its sort of like final quarter, it's in the kill zone. It means it's not got long. If you leave it for too long, the air is going to get to it. It's going to fuck up the whiskey. It'll taste different. It may not taste any worse, but it's not going to taste any better. So I've had quite a lot of whiskeys that have sort of been in the kill zone. So I've not been opening. I can't remember the last time I opened a new bottle of whiskey.
Neither.
It's probably been over a year. I've just been working through the ones that I've got open. So I think I went down from about 30 and I'm down to around 15 bottles.
That makes you sound like a raging alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I'm not going to dispute it. So this Jawaja isn't actually in the kill zone, but it will be at some point. And I just wanted to work on it because I don't want to open up any new bottles. So this is a Jawaja paddock to bottle and I'm going to open it.
There we go.
Not bad. And now I'm going to throw it open to you. And I'm really keen to hear what this case is all about. I have no idea. I'm sure once you tell me.
I tell you, you're going to know.
What is it?
So today's case takes place on Saturday, the 17th of August, 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurs in Strathfield.
Oh, okay. Right. So Strathfield Massacre.
Yes. So Strathfield is a suburb of the inner west of Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And our case takes place at the Strathfield Plaza. So it's just like a little shopping centre in the middle of sort of like a suburban area. So like nothing massive. You're not looking at your big shopping malls, just your usual shops, like your newsagents, like a jeweller.
Butcher.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Grocer.
Yeah. So it opened in 1981 and it's about four stories altogether. So two stories are the shopping mall and the top two stories are your car park.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very community-minded area at the time. Sort of everyone knew everyone. You know, the local news agent had the people they knew and all the kids that would come after school. Yeah. And so they were just everyone kind of was mingling together.
I worked in Strathfield for a couple of years and it's still somewhat like that. In this day and age, I was really surprised. People still know each other and they know they're all up in their business and everything. Hmm. So I can imagine if it's like that now, it would certainly have been like that in 1991.
Sure. Yeah. For sure. So inside the shopping centre is a cafe called the Coffee Pot. Now, it's not a shop, so to speak. It's one of those ones that sort of stands alone in the middle of the centre, so like an open plan style.
Yes, yeah, yep.
So it has – the way it works is it has booths around the outside with like bench seats. Mm-hmm. So they sit about four people. But it's not – they're not super high booths. They're the ones that go to maybe just below your shoulder blades.
Okay.
So they all – you know, they're like back onto each other.
Yes.
That this is – I'm not giving you random details here. This becomes important.
Okay. So
within the context of the case.
So the booths go up to your shoulder.
No, just below your shoulder blade.
Just below your shoulder blade. So like your chest, up to your chest.
Yeah, so you can see people in front of you, you can see people behind you, and you could turn around and have a chat with people behind you if you needed to.
Yeah, and you could sit up there. They had like high stools or something like that if you wanted to eat there on the other side, or is it just for ordering?
No, so they're booths, so low down ones. Not, you're thinking of tall tables.
I'm thinking of tall tables.
Yeah, booths are the ones that have like bench seats. Oh, so okay. Two people sit next to each other.
Ah, I don't think I've ever seen a waist. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, 100% have. I will post a photo just to make this clearer. Please go and have a look.
Exactly what you're talking about now. Yes. Okay. It's just like a booth.
Yeah, it's a booth.
Just a normal booth. I don't know, for some reason you were like, it's shoulder high. And someone's thinking.
Some of them can be like above your head. Head height.
Oh,
can
really?
They?
Oh, I don't know. Okay. I don't think so. I would have just said booth. Like.
Oh, okay.
Like you go to any booth, right?
He's like, maybe trying to give like a good amount of detail. No, and I've gone too far.
No, it's fine. So just a normal booth. Like, okay.
Normal booth.
Put it in my mind. Archie Rose, you know how you walk in and they've got the booths?
Yes, correct.
They come up to your chest.
Yes. So yes.
Just a normal booth.
Yeah, just a normal booth.
Just a normal height booth.
Sorry, everybody.
No, don't apologize. It's on me.
And so like in the center of the cafe are just like freestanding tables. So you've got the booths around the outside, freestanding tables in the middle.
Okay.
So a man catches a train from North Strathfield Station where he tells the train guard he knew his name. He just looked at him and said, go home. Yeah. So, but this was not before he loitered around the station for around about an hour.
Okay.
So it is hypothesized he was perhaps planning to commit his crimes at this location.
What, at the train station?
At the train station.
Okay.
But instead, he boards a train to Strathfield, which is the neighboring suburb, like the neighboring area. So North Strathfield to Strathfield. He enters Strathfield Plaza and sits at the Coffee Pot Cafe at 1 p.m.
Because I've just had a look at the photos of what the coffee pot looks like. Mm. And, yeah, so it's much larger than I thought it was. Because usually when you think about those little in the middle, they're just sort of – they're all four sides are on show and then they've got like a few tables on the outside.
Yeah.
This was like huge. This was like a little mini – cafe, restaurant, right?
Yeah, it's a cafe.
But it's just open.
It's just open plan. It's like you open see them all the time, like in the middle of Westfield and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they're so much smaller is my point.
Yeah, okay.
So this is like one of those, but four times bigger.
Yes.
Right, okay. And it's lined with at least half a dozen booths on either side, like you would see in a diner, in a cafe, whatever.
Yeah.
And then freestanding chairs and tables, five or six rows again in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Okay. I struggled to get my head around it, and I know you said that was important.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, I was thinking it was something small. It's actually quite large, those things.
So the man enters Strathfield Plaza, as I said, and sits in the coffee pot cafe from 1 p.m. in one of the booths, just contemplating, watching, while sitting there and drinking four cups of coffee. So I can't imagine. Four cups of coffee is a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
So he's wearing jeans, a denim jacket, and a grey beanie. And apparently he keeps looking behind him to see some girls sitting at the booth directly behind him.
Yeah.
So then one of these girls was 15-year-old Roberta Armstrong. She was sitting with one of her friends, just having like a girls catch up over a cup of coffee, talking about teenage stuff.
Yeah.
She apparently was described as a shy, demure, and gorgeous young girl who loved ballet and her academics. She was well-liked and played the flute.
Cute.
Now, also in the plaza at this time was Greg Reed, 41. We fucking love Greg.
Oh, okay.
I just want you to know that. We are going to love Greg.
Okay.
So Greg was a retired ex-Navy veteran and served in Vietnam.
Okay.
So he was in the hardware shop to get a toilet seat, and then he said he went to go to the paper shop, which I'm assuming was the newsagent.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. So it's now 3:30 p.m. And what would happen in the next 10 minutes, and 10 minutes only, would devastate a community.
You said 3 p.m.?
3:30 p.m.
3:30. So he's been loitering at the coffee pot for 2.5 hours, drinking his four cups of coffee and being a bit of a lurker.
Being a weirdo.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, with no warning, the man sitting behind Roberta turns around in his chair, smiles, and begins to brutally stab her in the back with a 20-inch Bowie knife.
Was she facing away from him? Is that why it's in the back?
Yeah, she had her back to him. Yep.
Shit. So she didn't even, she wouldn't have even known that.
Wouldn't have even known. He just apparently just turned around, pulled out his knife and just started stabbing her, and she screams and then slumps over and dies.
Oh.
She had no chance. Leaving the knife inside Roberta before anybody could react, he pulls out a semi-automatic rifle from a cardboard mailing tube and just begins shooting. Now here we see like basically desperate parents trying to save their children, because remember it's a Saturday, so there's families everywhere.
I was going to say, I forgot that it was a Saturday. I was thinking, but also if it had been during the week, 3:30, that's prime
same
kids.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're so sitting at this families. Point in a relatively enclosed area, not fully enclosed, but relatively enclosed.
Relatively enclosed, yeah.
So within the gunfire was Joyce Nixon, 61, and her daughter Patricia Rowe, 36. Now, they immediately push down a table to try and protect Patricia's two children, Kevin, 15, and Nathan, 9. They are successful in protecting these two children, but in the process, Joyce is shot twice and Patricia is shot in the back, and both were killed instantly.
Oh, my God. In front of her kids and grandmother.
In front of her kids, yep. The owner of the cafe, George Marveris, 51, comes out to see what all the commotion is, because this is happening within seconds.
Yeah.
And George is immediately shot and killed as he comes out.
Jesus.
Also in the cafe are Carol Dickinson, her daughter Belinda, 20, and their 17-year-old friend Rachel Milburn. Rachel starts moving towards the gunman and is immediately shot in the head. Jesus. Carol then pushes her daughter behind one of the pot plants to save her, but was shot in the chest and killed as a result, but still managed to save her daughter.
Oh, my God.
Now, Greg Reed, obviously ex-military, immediately recognizes the sound of gunshots. Now, most people apparently, other people said it sounded like those like metal trays were being dropped on the ground, was sort of the description of the sound they okay. sort of talked about.
Yep.
But Greg Reed's ex-military, being in Vietnam, he knows that those are gunshots and he becomes hyper alert.
Yeah.
And at this point, the entire plaza is starting to become increasingly panicked as people run and spread the news that there's a madman on the loose, basically.
Yeah, and also just with that much noise and everything, I even hear it now and I'm like, it sounds like a car backfiring, for instance, and I'm like, but what if? I don't know what it was like in 1991, but I think we are so accustomed now to hearing that our warning system goes off.
Yeah, and you also just wouldn't, have you inside a plaza on a Saturday? Like you're like, what, funny noise, but like whatever, I'm not expecting gunshots.
No.
Like, you wouldn't, yeah.
It's and especially this quickly. Like it just sounds like it's just one after the other.
It's just, it's so, this whole thing occurs in 10 minutes. Jeez. This is how fast it is.
And what are we up to? How many so far?
I think we're up to
one,
4 or 5.
Two, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think.
Yeah.
So far. But so, sorry, what was his weapon? So obviously he had the Bowie knife.
Had the Bowie knife and now he's got a semi-automatic firearm.
Okay. And you said that was concealed within a cardboard box or something.
Yeah, like the ones you put out like posters in.
Oh, so like a round tube.
Yeah, like a mailing tube. Yeah.
How did that fit in there?
It might have been a big mailing tube.
And maybe he had his like magazine in his pockets or something like that.
No, I think it was all together, but it was it's not like an AK-47 size. It's a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
So it's not like you don't have that like huge mag in size. It's a relatively compact magazine.
It unfortunately puts me in mind of, I don't know if you've seen it, Terminator 2, because in that, I mean, obviously I hate this where people like blame. I'm not blaming movies. I'm not blaming video games or any of that shit.
Well, they do actually blame that in this on some level.
I was actually watching Bowling for Columbine the other day where they talk about this, but it does sound eerily similar to the scene in which Arnie, as a Terminator, he's got a shotgun hidden within a box of flowers and in a shopping mall. Yeah, so I was just thinking, I can't remember when Terminator 2 came out, so maybe this was before. I think it was around 91 actually. Like I think it's around that time. So, yeah, it just puts me in mind of that, to be honest. So at this point, sorry, just going back. So he's got a semi-automatic that he's firing off. Greg Reed, his spidey senses are tingling and he's like, something's going down.
So he's like, he's immediately gone, gunshots. This is gunshots. Now, this is all happening so quick. Like I said, there's panic.
Mm.
Shop owners didn't even have time to lock their shops. So they're just like herding people into like their staff rooms and into the back to try and save as many people as they could.
Yeah.
Like some people, there was like one, the news agent had 12 people in a room that was 2 meters squared.
Jeez. Like yeah, there were, you but know, you would, wouldn't you? You would just cram in.
Everyone was just trying to help everybody.
Yeah.
It's now only 3:32.
Shit, so
only
so two minutes
have passed.
Far out.
Now, having shot throughout the cafe, the gentleman then walks, I'm going to call him a gentleman, then walks into the plaza proper and just starts shooting again. He walks towards the Franklins, and for anyone who's not Australian and alive in the 90s, Franklins is a supermarket.
Yeah, it's sort of what you what Coles and Woolies and have grown into, but it was better because you had no frills.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And now he's just shooting randomly.
Is he aiming at people or is he just popping off at this point?
He's aiming at people, yes.
Shit.
But outside the chemist, he shoots 53-year-old Robertson Can Hock Voon and starts injuring numerous others. So anyone in sight's being shot up. He injures about half a dozen people at this point. They're narrowly managing to survive, like many of them crawling away in pools of their own blood. Like it's absolute bedlam. Now, when everyone is hiding, everyone's hiding at this point, but not Greg Reed. He is now tracking the gunman, trying to find out his exact location. Now, Greg finds him, and it seems he said that the gunman was trying to be a commando person, as he describes it.
Hmm.
And the way Greg goes, he wasn't a commando, was fantastic. He was just like this knows. Man is pathetic.
Yeah.
And apparently he wasn't calm, but also not panicked.
Who, Greg?
No, the offender.
The offender.
So the gunman.
Is there a reason we're not naming him?
Yeah, because we're going to talk about it at the end.
Okay, cool.
We're going to talk about it at the
end. Okay, so yeah, dickshit.
Dickshit McGee.
Wasn't calm but wasn't erratic
panicked,
either.
Yeah, so the impression was he didn't know what the fuck he was doing, but he also wasn't running around like a crazy person.
So he didn't know what he was doing, but he knew what he was doing at the time. Like he wasn't an expert, but he thought he might have been.
Yeah.
But he was well within his wits and control. Like he's not not to play fucking innocent or plead insanity at the end of all this, right?
100%.
Yeah, so that's
what
he said.
He wasn't a commando.
He wasn't a commando, he wishes.
So at this time, police have been contacted by shop owners. So they're on the way.
Yeah.
Greg now goes out of the shopping centre to a, not outside, but out to an exit point that leads to a set of stairs that goes to escalators that lead up to the car park.
Okay.
Yep. Greg now realises after watching the gunman, he's not shooting at anyone who's lying down on the ground. So he starts just getting before the gunman and telling everyone to get on the ground, get on the ground. There's a shooter, but don't stand up. So he's getting all these people, everyone he can to get down. Now there is, this bit's semi-important to describe and I hope I'm not terrible at it.
You won't
There's
be.
Travelators that go up to the car park. Mm-hmm. So anyone doesn't know what a travelator is, it's an escalator that's flat as opposed to having stairs.
Yes.
And now it goes up in sort of a, like a V shape upwards.
What do you mean a
V-shape?
You know
how they go like, they'll go kind of like a ramp. They're ramp. They're going up like a ramp. So like Broadway Shopping Centre.
Yeah.
The ramp, how it goes up in kind of like that V-shape all the way up.
Oh, okay. So it goes, you got to go up one way, then you walk around the other side and then sort of, yes. Yeah. Like I don't, where do you get the V from?
It's kind of like a V-shape, isn't it?
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking
about.
Never mind. Yeah, like, but
anyway,
like you,
it's an
you normally.
Ramp.
So it's like you've got to walk, you come out, let's just say you're facing the front, you come up and you come out facing the front, but then you've got to walk around the back to continue going up again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, and the gap, you can see down a gap through the center of the travelator. So you can see all the way down and all the way up. And
yes.
That is important.
Okay.
So Greg's running up, everyone sit down, saving everyone he can because he realizes that that's what's happening.
Right.
Now the offender starts to realize that's what Greg's doing and he sees him running up the ramp.
Holy shit.
And so he's following Greg now. He's like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you. Greg's like, you're not a commando. So Greg moves up one level above him and looks down and sees the offender who then fires two shots at him. Misses because
he's not a commando.
But it was close. It was close.
Yeah. And it's super brave for Greg to be doing this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Jeez.
Greg's now even more determined to save people from him.
Yeah.
Even more determined.
Yeah.
He said he was so determined that he's leaping three stairs at a time, fueled by adrenaline. And he's like, I wasn't a little guy. I was a heavy set man. So for me to be doing that, there had to be a lot of energy in
me. A lot of adrenaline.
Mm. It's now 3:37.
Okay.
So only seven minutes have passed at this point.
And so he's gone up maybe, what, one or two flights? Yeah. Oh, no. Well, there was only two.
There's only two.
So is he going up now to the car park levels?
He's going up to the car park.
Okay. So, yeah.
So he's heading towards the car park now.
Jeez.
But while he's doing that, he's sort of trying to continue his rampage. But once again, like Greg said, he's not shooting people that are on the ground, which is weird.
It is weird.
We're not shooting. Anyway, they both make it into the car park. Now, they're on the top level of the car park, which isn't enclosed. So it's a fully open car park. Now, Greg's still being Greg at this point, and he's going to each car and saying, lie down your cars. There's a gunman. Stay here. Don't move. Now, he tells one specific lady who's in a car on her own, and he's like, lie down flat. And she just looks at him and says, too late. He's right behind you.
What?
He turns around, and the offender is about 18 meters from him.
Shit.
And he's like, that was a distance he should not miss from.
Yeah.
He's very close. He's got a semi-automatic rifle. He should not miss me.
But he's also not right behind you either. Right behind you is 1 meter behind you. Like, what do you mean too late?
Well, because, I think for her she was like, we're trying to hide, but now he's seen us both.
Okay, so I hear you.
You were telling me to hide, but what's the fucking
point? I've watched
too
many horror movies.
Yeah, okay,
because I'm just expecting that scare tactic of just, right behind you. And yeah,
no, 18 meters,
so shouldn't be missing because he's a wannabe commando.
Exactly.
But
he didn't fire straight away, which was weird. So at that point, Greg's like, fuck it, and he leaps sideways behind the car. And as soon as he did that, the offender fired at him.
Mm.
He actually ended up getting shot just in the foot.
Just in the foot.
But I'm saying that's how close it was to him. It was as he was like mid-air.
Right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So it's now 3:40.
Okay.
He's discharged over 50 rounds of ammunition and he looked like he wasn't going to stop. Now, Greg's still being Greg. Even though he's been shot in the foot, he gets the idea to get in his car and just run him over.
Oh, my God.
He's just going to get in his car and run him over.
This is a legit action movie. Like, this is a proper horror action movie.
Greg was not fucking about.
No.
We love Greg.
Yeah.
Now, it appears the offender's losing his cool a little bit and becoming increasingly frustrated.
Yeah, because Greg is pissing him off.
Yeah.
He's making him look like a clown.
He is, massively. So he begins shooting down, like, an inanimate objects, like, and just random things because nobody's there to sort of garner his attention. And he then starts shooting down to the street.
Oh.
The street below.
Yeah.
And he does injure two more people down there.
Oh, my goodness.
And they manage to kind of go and hide inside a building and they do survive.
Yeah.
He then moves over to a business that's accessed via the upper car park and he tried to shoot out the lock of the door but wasn't successful.
Mm.
And to that, Greg said he clearly had no idea where the lock mechanism was and it was showing how amateurish he was.
Oh, my God, yes. Just throwing in that salt to be like, you don't know what the fuck you're doing, mate.
I love, like, it's just Greg was just judging the fuck out of him. So it's now 3:41 and it appears he's desperate and things are starting to wind up.
Is Greg getting in his car at this point?
Greg is.
Yeah.
But the offender then approaches a woman driving her car and this woman is Catherine Noyes. At this point, she's got no idea what's happening inside the plaza. She's kind of just driven in. So she's got no idea about the carnage. He gets inside her car, puts a gun to her head and says, drive me to Enfield. Now, for those who don't know, Enfield's a neighbouring suburb to Strathfield.
Because he arrived by train, remember?
Yes.
So it's not like he's driven here. He's got no way of escaping more other than on foot. So he's now taken her hostage?
Yes. And so she's like, fuck, he's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. Now, at this point in time, he hears police sirens.
Yeah.
They've just approached. He then tells the woman in the car to stop. And at this point, she's like, I'm dead. I'm fucking dead.
It'd be terrifying.
But he doesn't. Instead, he gives her what she describes as an incredibly heartfelt apology.
Okay.
He exits the car, puts the gun to his neck, and kills himself. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And okay, so there's quite a bit to unpack there. So a heartfelt apology.
Apparently he just turned to her and was like, I'm so sorry. And then, like, got out and shot himself.
In the neck?
Well, I'm assuming like he shot himself obviously in the head, but like if you've got a rifle, it's got to be around the neck region. You can't like pick up a rifle.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
Well, you probably could, but it'd be difficult.
It might have been like he's gone up. Oh, yeah, up through the.
Yeah, like up by neck, I mean like up through like the chinny,
the chin
area.
Chin. It's weird that he apologizes. Like, did he feel remorse at the very end for what he did? Like, obviously we don't know, but That's super strange.
Yeah.
Just hearing sirens would cause him to do that. Not even, I don't know. It's strange. Anyway.
It's weird. So everyone can finally breathe.
Mm.
8 people are dead, including the offender, with dozens wounded.
Yeah.
Now, randomly, one victim was found with machete wounds, which led police to believe that perhaps he had an accomplice, but that was soon ruled out. So they think maybe he had done these wounds with something and they never found a machete.
Could it have been his Bowie knife? Or was that
no,
still
the Bowie
within...
knife's still in Roberta.
Maybe he so might have had another weapon.
I think he did have a machete, but it's never really talked about that much. It's always okay. The Bowie knife and the semi-automatic firearm.
Yeah, understood.
So the community shook.
Yeah.
They're like, who is this man? What are his motivations? Like, this was so random, so quick, like 11 minutes done. You know, what the fuck was this?
Mm.
Anyway, they obviously found out who the man was, and his name was Wade Frankham. He was a 33-year-old part-time taxi driver, and he lived in North Strathfield, so just 3 kilometres away.
So he was a local.
Mm. No criminal record, no history of violence, and didn't have a life of any note or any remark.
Yeah. He was just a normal 33-year-old.
Normal's a bit cool.
Well, up until this point.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Now, Dr. Milton was a forensic psychologist who assessed him at the time. He did write a book that had sort of his assessment and everything.
Mm.
Guys, I love you, but I don't $400 love you.
Is that how much the book
That's how
is?
Much the – and it was secondhand.
Jesus.
It was a secondhand book for $400.
What was the book about?
It was just his like scientific – I guess, analysis he'd done and some interviews.
I was like, mate,
you would have got paid a fuckload of money to do those expert reports. Yeah. Like a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then you want me to pay $400 for a secondhand version of your book? Go fuck yourself.
But why is he cashing in on this? Just like share that shit for free.
I would have thought that shit would be illegal.
Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Especially, I would have thought there would have been like court records or it would have been subpoenaed. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe this was just such a clean case, like open shut case, that I didn't actually need that to. I mean, what are they going to prosecute? But right, okay. So no, we don't have that. We do not have that kind of budget.
Nope. So he spoke to family members, friends, doctors, even sex workers he'd been with. He'd been treated for depression, but that was the only mental health history. He apparently had never shown much emotion, and that was very likely due to his upbringing. The parents were distant and unloving. His mother was unpredictable with how she showed love and was prone to fits of rage, and she drank too much. Some of the information I found said she had manic depressive disorder, which is what we now know as bipolar.
Okay. So like we say, feel sorry for the child,
not the adult. Yeah. Yep. The parents were also very strict. The children were locked in their room to study at night, and they expected 100% in everything they did.
Yeah.
Like 99% was not good enough.
That's unbelievable. That's crazy.
But conversely, they also regarded him too highly and made him believe he was capable of far more than what he actually was.
Mm.
He was also dyslexic, so he struggled a lot at school, which would have resulted in poor academics, maybe a little bit of bullying.
Right. Okay. So he's got a lot going on. As a kid, these are tough circumstances.
Once again, feel sorry for the kid.
Feel
sorry for the kid. Now, one thing they did know was a big motivator was failure. And it was almost like this massacre was the only thing he'd been successful at in his life.
Oh, my goodness.
He thought he was much better than what he was and what he had achieved. You know, he'd been educated at Newington College. He went to Homebush Boys. Like he had the best opportunities, but made nothing of his life.
Well, yeah, it does. So is that, but you said he'd been built up to be something that he really wasn't.
No.
So even though he had all of this pressure and everything like that, that kind of, for most kids, will strangle them. You can't thrive with that much pressure and expectation and everything. But then he's also being told how amazing he is.
It was such a contradiction because you hear like you're amazing, but also you're a fucking dropkick.
It's sort of like you are amazing, so you better do so well.
Yeah,
but
I actually don't think he was amazing.
But that's the thing. He probably didn't do the well part, so he fucked up by not doing well. But he actually he swallowed that Kool-Aid bullshit.
Yeah.
Of how amazing he was, even though, as you say, what is actually amazing about him?
No, nothing. He left school, he had a number of dead end jobs before he became a part time taxi driver.
Right.
He was basically a loner, no friends.
Surprise, shock me.
So his father died in 1986 of emphysema, and his mother never got over the death, apparently. And in April 1990, she took her own life.
Oh, that's sad.
And he took that very hard, of course.
Yeah, you would.
Due to her death, he inherited $30,000.
Which but back then's no...
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. That's
it's a lot
to
of money.
Sneeze about.
It's not money to sneeze about now.
No, of course. But back then, 80s, late 80s? What did you say, sorry?
1990.
Yeah. Like, jeez.
So he spent the entirety of it on one television and sex workers. Sometimes he's spending upwards of $5,000 a week on sex workers.
Well, I guess that's how he's finding love, connection. He doesn't have friends, you said. He doesn't have any of that. So he's now got the means to fill that void, right?
Mm. Well, because there was also questions about his sexuality based on his behavior with these sex workers.
Okay.
I read a lot of things and there's problematic wording about the fact that he probably was gay. And had not accepted it, and they like it's
but
so
maybe
problematic.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was just maybe that was just like one of his kinks. And
oh no, his ex. We'll talk about his ex fiance in a second.
Yeah. Oh, so hang on, fiance.
We'll talk about her. It didn't last long.
I was okay. So he hasn't met her yet at this point though.
I know they've already broken up by the time his mother died. She doesn't.
Oh, so he did have somebody then.
He did. You don't hear much information on her. I couldn't find anything on her except from like archives of newspapers.
Right.
That was the only place I could find anything about her.
Okay. Interesting.
So there were suggestions that his sexual proclivities that he'd shown during their times with sex workers could indicate sexual abuse as a child. So there were sort of beliefs that that might have been the case. Sorry, it was an ex-girlfriend, not an ex-fiancé. I'm sorry. But she stated they broke up because he was telling her about increasingly homosexual tendencies.
Right.
So like, perhaps.
But like I said, maybe that was just one of his kinks. I don't know.
Could have been a kink. He could have been bi. He could have been anything.
Anything. But, yeah, I just don't like to – I get it. And as you said, it's sort of – when you're talking about 1990, 1991, it's
hard
to –
Some of the wording is problematic.
Yeah,
and I've tried to keep a lot of it out of it because it's fucking problematic.
But it definitely sounds like – he was just a really confused, conflicted individual.
Yeah. Too many mixed messages in his brain and his life.
And no love, you know, no connections. So he's had to kind of – this is where he's kind of ended up at this point.
Yeah. And one of the sex workers he visited the most frequently emphasized how much of a release sex was for him.
Right.
And she said, I knew that if he didn't get regular sex, the result would be catastrophic.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was 100% a release he needed.
Jeez.
She also told police that his behavior was becoming increasingly disturbed in the weeks leading up to the massacre.
In what way?
She doesn't give. Once again, like all this stuff is sort of things I had to find from archives of newspapers. There's no coronial inquest about it because New South Wales is very particular. In fact, there's in one of the newspaper articles I did read, the coroner got pissed because a lot of this got leaked to the press when it should have been a closed court.
Okay,
so
interesting.
Like, sort of, I think it was within a couple of days into the trial, they're like, anybody fucking reports on this, you're in the dock.
Which
like,
is fair enough. Once it's an open case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if it's an ongoing case, totally understand that. But it's just interesting that gets leaked, but not the follow up. Like, what do you, so what do you mean by that? And we don't have that answer.
I can't tell you, like, 1990s newspapers articles. I'm like, it's like reading shit from the 50s. Like,
oh, really? Like, I know, it's fucked up. And, like, we thought the 90s were yesterday.
Yeah.
it's
fucked up.
So she was saying that sex was a release he needed, and if he didn't get it, the results would be disastrous. They'd be catastrophic.
Yeah.
But we don't know what she meant by that.
No. No.
But surely she couldn't have foreseen this. This is just...
No one's going to expect
that
someone's going to go and commit a massacre.
Of course.
That's not to be expected.
Yeah.
So now, as I said, within the weeks leading up, he's running out of money and apparently he only had $53 in his bank account.
How the fuck do you go through 30K?
Sex workers. He was spending sometimes $5,000 a week on sex workers.
So I guess that takes you through 6 weeks. Jeez.
And like I said, because we were talking about how films and videos and all that kind of stuff, they believe, you know, it was just sort of was quite prevalent in the 90s.
Right.
So apparently it also hired a bunch of violent films and books, including American Psycho.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've read that. Have you read it?
No.
Do you know why? I mean, like, that's always been one of the ones. I've read it and I really enjoyed it. It's a fucked up book, but I don't understand how it's kind of got the reputation. Was that one of the ones that they used, said, oh, well, this contributed to it? Or?
Yeah. And he also had, on him when he committed the massacre, he had Crime and Punishment.
Oh, like
Dostoyevsky.
Yeah, thank you. Dostoyevsky. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You all know what we're saying.
Yeah, you know what we're saying. Dostoyevsky. Something like that. Yeah. Right. Okay. Which, once again, I read that about 15 years ago now. It's very sad. It's a very bleak book.
I think it's because they struggled. It just seems to me they really struggled to locate a motive, like an actual motive for him committing these crimes. So they kind of were grasping at whatever was sort of like the psychological literature at the time, which was that belief of violence begets violence.
Baguette.
Don't do that.
Okay. Because American Psycho, Bret Easton Ellis, that is a really fucked up book. And if you've seen the movie, you know, Christian Bale plays Patrick Bateman, and he plays very, very well. But there are some scenes in that where I read them and I just went, oh, geez, like that is wild. And particularly violence against women, like Patrick Bateman, the main character, his violence against women, it's fucking horrifying.
Mm.
But then there's that whole allegory of, well, yuppie culture, capitalism, like all of that. I can't see how you take that and you translate that into a massacre in this way. Like maybe if this had been violence against sex workers and he'd like perpetrated some of the violent acts that were contained in that, you're like, oh, well, okay, yeah, it's sort of a copycat, right? Mm. I don't know. I'm also very, like I said, I was watching parts of Bowling for Columbine and you listen to sort of Marilyn Manson speak, who at the time he was blamed, his music was because they listened to Marilyn Manson and, you know, he had one of the best points made. It was, what would you say to them? He said, oh, I'd listen because that's what nobody did. Nobody bothered to listen to these kids and hear what their problems were. And it was, everybody was too busy saying what they needed to have done and what this should have been done. And it's sort of, it's interesting out of that whole thing that I know I'm going on a bit of a monologue here and I apologize, but it just pisses me off that video games, movies, music, all that kind of stuff, books in this case, gets the bad rap. It's just creativity.
I feel like it's
a cop out.
An easy way to explain something that our brains can't comprehend.
That's right.
That somebody is just a psychopath. Somebody just Correct. Has these tendencies, but we're like, oh, no, like what would have caused it? What would have caused it from our perspective?
Yeah.
It's a very, very easy out
Correct.
To explain something like that. Oh, well, he watched too many violent movies.
Correct.
That couldn't happen to me or that couldn't happen to my child.
Absolutely. And that's exactly right. And I'm going to stop there because, I mean, I love violent
It's video sloppy. Games. It's sloppy psychology.
It's terrible.
It's sloppy.
As you said, it's just them trying to pin a motive on something just to. But then, do you know what's also fucked up? The same day that I think it was the same day that Columbine. I'm going back to Columbine because it's like the parallels are there. You want to blame something?
Mass shootings.
It was like the once again Marilyn Manson made this point. The day that Columbine shootings took place, he and his music was blamed. Yet it was the day that I think the most amount of bombs were dropped on Iraq.
Huh.
Tell me that that's not more violent than Marilyn Manson screaming fuck or like he hates the church or he disagrees with
government
the church.
Can do that shit, why can't
and
you?
He said, and well, one of his most famous comments was in that interview was, I'd like, you know, who's more influential? I would like to think it was me, but I'm going to go with the president. And then the NRA shortly afterwards had a massive rally and convention.
Of course they did.
Like, we're still seeing it today. We're still seeing shootings in America all the fucking time. There are a litany of issues here. It just pisses me the fuck off.
Yeah.
So sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
It's sloppy reasoning and lazy reasoning.
I apologize, everybody. That was a little rant.
Little side note. So in September 1990, he had obtained his firearms license.
Of course he did.
In January 1991, he'd purchased a 7.62 SKS self-loading assault rifle, which is the gun he used, and 100 rounds of ammunition.
And he went through 50 of those. In 10 minutes. Yeah. Jeez, Lord.
So he knew what he was preparing for and he was doing it early. He had told his sister's husband that the reason he bought the gun was for protection and to, quote, "It's a fucked up world out there and there's some weird fuckers out there."
Yeah, mate, you.
Were you looking in a mirror when you said that? Was that like you directly to your fucking reflection? Like, is that what was happening? I just imagine him there with like the Beauty and the Beast mirror, like looking at himself being like, "There's some weird fuckers out there."
Yeah. No, it's actually rather than the mirror, it's like him looking at himself in the fucking Bowie knife being like, "Oh, just horrible
some
people.
Some weird fuckers out there."
Yeah.
He also said he wanted to wipe people out to protect himself.
Okay. There's some issues there.
Yeah. He was also writing cryptic notes, which I tried to find details on, but I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
So apologies for that. He'd also bought the Bowie knife and a set of handcuffs in April 1991. And he even tried to have the knife sharpened to a razor's edge.
Oh, my goodness.
Which you can't have on a fucking Bowie knife.
No.
Like, you just can't. In case anyone's wondering what a Bowie knife is, I can post Rambo. It on our story. But, yeah, it's that, I thought, like, it's that typical knife you think that is sheathed in like a leather sheath at someone's ankle.
Like yeah, you think it's Rambo, like Vietnam era.
Big ass knife.
Yeah, massive knife.
Yeah, big knife.
That's what it is. Yeah, it's brutal. It's a hunting knife.
Mm. So the day before the massacre, he shaved his head. And remember what Greg said? Like, he's not a commando, he's a fucking amateur. But he's trying to be all like military, shaving his head. What's interesting as well is that his ex-girlfriend said that any time he dramatically changed his hair was a sign of impending difficulty.
Ah, interesting. Mm. I mean,
which you like girls do after breakup.
I was about to say, I feel personally attacked from that. Yeah. Like, I'm growing my hair really long at the moment and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Well, apparently when he would do something like that, it meant that shit was probably going to go down soon.
So do we know if, you know, she said, so we've heard that from the ex-girlfriend. We've heard from the sex worker saying that if he didn't get his regular sex, that something catastrophic was going to happen. Do we know what they're referring to? We don't know what they're referring to.
It's
not this level.
It's all very vague and grey, but it's like, like I said, it was impending doom. Like, that's what it sort of kind of implies.
But did he go off the rails? Like, was he, like, would he become violent? Would he become self?
Everything I've read was that he was just this loner.
But that's obviously not the case, though. And I know that's what you read. I'm not. That's obviously what's out there. But when you're hearing this, he's obviously demonstrated some sort of fucking tendencies in the past, There's something there for them to turn around and be like, oh, yeah, the hair is a trigger.
Mm.
So he's shaved his head. He's wanting to go full commando.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't understand. How does he get that many? I understand, 1991, but that nobody needs those weapons.
It's pre-Port Arthur.
Yeah, exactly.
So as long as you had a firearms license, you could buy a semi-automatic rifle.
Mm.
So there's little motivation for his behavior that we can find. Some people say there was a sense of guilt over his mother taking her own life.
Okay.
That he had no outlet with those sex workers, as we talk about, and then he was pissed off that he was a failure despite like that being entirely in his control and him having like every possible reason to succeed in life.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. Other than that, like I said, zero history of violence, only history of depression. But what most people have said is for Frankham, this massacre was a success in a lifetime of failure.
Jeez.
Which is kind of why a lot of them think he turned around and smiled just before he stabbed Roberta. Remember I said that?
Yeah, you mentioned that. Like this, but, I mean, he went to Newington. That's a private school. Yeah. So in Australia, like a private school, what you would pay $30,000 a year to send them in high school, you know, something along those lines. That's always sort of been the case. Mm. So the family must have had some money, unless they got in on scholarships or something like that. But they must have had, so he mustn't, it's not like it sounds like he had difficult circumstances, but there were also, I don't know, it's just a weird thing I'm struggling to get my head around with him.
Yeah.
So this was his success.
This was his only success. In like success in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Like not.
That's what I meant.
He's a piece of shit.
Fucking hell. And that's why it made him so happy.
Mm.
He was smiling he murdered a 15-year-old girl, getting a cup of coffee with her friends.
And that's probably why he shot himself too. He was like, well, I fucking failed again because police are here.
Jeez.
Yeah. But on a more positive note, they figured that Greg saved at least 10 lives. Wow. That day.
At least. Seriously, at least. Yeah.
And in 1992, he was awarded the Star of Courage, which is awarded for acts of conspicuous courage in circumstances of great peril.
I've never heard of it. That's really cool. Mm.
So although it was a time for celebration of a good deed, Greg did end up suffering from PTSD from the massacre.
Yeah, okay.
So he also, like, sacrificed his mental health as well.
Jeez.
Like, Greg, you're a hero.
He is a proper hero.
There are now educational scholarships in the names of the victims. Oh, so lovely. The McDonald College in Strathfield has a scholarship in Roberta's name worth around $25,000.
Yeah.
And apparently there's an annual ceremony for the victims each year. Mm. It's invite only. Mm-hmm. But Greg apparently attends every year he can.
Lovely.
Which I love.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about before, I feel like this is where a conversation about gun violence in Australia laws are especially important.
Mm.
So it does occur before Port Arthur. So Port Arthur's 1996.
Mm-hmm.
But our gun laws were pretty loose. So you could own as many guns as you like.
Mm-hmm.
Semi-automatic rifles could be bought without registration and it was entirely unregulated. As long as you had a license, you could do whatever the fuck you wanted.
Wow.
And then as a result of this massacre, the National Coalition for Gun Control was formed and some changes were implemented. So I don't know if you know this, but we have a big arms factory in Lithgow.
No, I did not.
And so we actually got to go there when I was in the police.
Oh, cool.
Because as crime scene officers, we needed to know how to render all types of firearms safe.
Oh, okay.
So to make sure they were safe to store, they weren't loaded, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to go down there and mm-hmm. we got to shoot all weapons.
Oh, wow.
That you can imagine, up to semi-automatic rifles.
Right.
Because they also make the Stiers for the military.
Now, can you – sorry, I should have asked at the start. Semi-automatic. Automatic is where you could just squeeze the trigger and go, you know. Semi-automatic, you still have to squeeze it each time, right?
I think so. It's like auto-loading and I think it does. Yeah. Yeah.
But you still got to press the trigger. Like one bullet is one squeeze basically, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Something like that.
I could be wrong.
I could be wrong.
Please
too.
Don't quote
if you,
me.
If anybody
firearms
knows,
will never buy.
Yeah, no.
You can Google that now and we will tell you.
Hmm.
So basically what happened was they implemented a ban on this specific factory selling self-loading military-style rifles to the public.
That's
so they were only allowed to make them and give them to like military police personnel, all that kind of stuff. One minister actually stated the possession of firearms is not a right, but a conditional privilege, which like, are there any Americans listening? Not a right, a conditional privilege.
Which makes me think of they've got the Bill of Rights though, which is a right.
Yeah.
They've got the right to bear arms. We don't.
All I think about is that Family Guy skit.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like the founding fathers and they're like, every person has the right to hang a pair of bear arms on their wall. How could this possibly be misconstrued?
Yeah. Anyway. I know. There was that really powerful ad that came out, oh, look, probably 10 years ago or something like that, where they talked about it was an anti-gun commercial and it went viral, whatever that meant back in the day, and it showed a guy walking into the office with a musket. I don't know if you've seen it. And so basically what he does is he holds the musket up, shoots it, and then he then has to, you know, pull out he pulls out the
gunpowder.
Gunpowder, thank you. Rips it open, pours it in, gets his thing out, and he like pushes it down and then gets the cannon, the ball out, the like all of that basically he's showing that. By the time this happens, he's fired the one musket bullet. And everybody's just evacuated by that point. And they were saying like the laws back then, the right to bear arms is very different to what we're seeing now. Now I did just confirm, semi-automatic means one trigger, one bullet.
Mm.
So you just need to, pop. And it's always like one thing that I was, politics aside, whatever, it's just wherever you sit, it was really great that Australia came together and our government after Port Arthur, but now I didn't realize this happened after, like there were the amendments made after this as well.
Oh, but like let's guess at least one of the states who still had one of the most lax gun laws after all this came in.
Tassie. Yeah, well, Tassie,
Tassie is where Port Arthur is in case, Tassie is Tasmania, which is our little island at the bottom of Australia and that's where the Port Arthur massacre happens, which we will cover.
That's the map of Tassie, you know. It's if you don't know what that is, look it up. I'm not going to tell you.
But it was Queensland was the other state.
Oh, Queensland was the other state, right. Yeah, and if you're not sure what Port Arthur is, we will cover it in a future episode, but that was basically another massacre. And after that, there was gun control. Basically, you can't own guns.
Yeah.
You can, but you need to get very strict gun laws.
And I will talk about when we do the Port Arthur, I'll talk about what our gun laws mean now and
that'll be great.
This kind of stuff.
But just based on this, there was some reform.
There was great reform.
Yep. Great reform.
And it was the beginning of making Australia safe or safer from gun violence.
Can you tell me when was the Father's Day massacre? That was the late 80s, was it?
86.
Because it seems like there
Don't
was
quote
a
me on that.
Few of these types of, I mean, that one.
But the Father's Day massacres with bikies, which is one of those ones where it's like they're always going to be illegally obtained.
That was 84, yeah.
Firearms.
But there was that innocent victim.
There was the young girl.
The young girl. So, I feel like there were kind of few and far between. But yeah, like I said, it's great that there was some reform after this. And what happened next after all this? So Greg Reed, is he still alive? Do we know? Is he still?
He, well, as far as I know.
Yeah.
As far as I know, from the documentary I watched, but the documentary was a while ago, but yeah, he should be still alive. Like he'll be in his 70s, 80s now. But
yeah, he, as you said, absolute hero, and he at least saved 10. Given how busy that would have been on a Saturday afternoon,
he got him out of the shopping plaza where the majority of people would have been.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So before we go, I think it's important we remember the names of the victims because we kind of went relatively quickly through how quickly that went. Mm. So we had Roberta Armstrong, 15, Robertson Can Hock Voon, 51, Patricia Rowe, 37, Carol Dickinson, 47, Joyce Nixon, 61, Rachel Milburn, 17, and George Maveris, 51.
Yeah, that's just within the space of 3 minutes, I think. Most of them died in the first two to three minutes.
You said
Robertson was a little bit later because it's very sad, and especially, as I said, just the Strathfield community, as I said, even now, they're very close-knit, and you do have those. You know how you have those pockets?
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just you'd have those pockets around anywhere you live, but I do know that the Strathfield community are very close.
Yeah. It's a very, multicultural community as well, so I think a lot of different people all came together. And
as you said, George Reed is a hero. It's really lovely that they still commemorate those victims. Mm. And we've seen that with the Luna Park Ghost Train Fire, that the schools do that, and Roberta getting the scholarship. That's a really lovely way to honour her memory. Thank you.
No worries.
Interesting one. I got a little bit annoyed through that one.
There are some ragey bits you can rage about in this. He's a dick shit.
This is one, though, I feel like I don't know who he is.
No, that's the point. Everyone's we don't understand truly what his motivations could be. We don't understand him. Obviously, the coronial, normally I can kind of find some, psychologist reports, but.
But you're not paying $400 for that shit.
Oh, love you guys, but maybe if we ever start getting paid for this podcast, we'll pay $400 for a book. But up until then,
What's it going to say? What is it going to give us?
That's the thing. I think
because just going to blame American Psycho.
I've read a bunch of stuff from Dr. Milton, and it's all very wishy washy. Maybe this, maybe that. Who knows? Probably those books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. They don't know, and it just feels weird that somebody can take away so much for no reason. Okay, I'm sure he had a reason he felt pissed off at the world. And
I think it was that he was sick of his life of fucking failure, and he figured out this was the way to do it. Yeah, maybe he had some other undiagnosed mental health problems. It was the 90s. Mental health was harder to access, especially for men. But
yeah, true. Something to think about. But look, thank you for telling that story.
No worries.
It was very sad, very triggering. Sorry once again for my monologue, soapbox, grandstand speech in the middle of that.
You do whatever you want because this is your podcast.
It's our podcast.
Our podcast.
And collectively with the listeners at home, it's our podcast.
James just did a big
hugging arms. So, yeah, guys, thank you for listening. talking about dirtbags that destroy.
A dog?
No.
Not a killer?
I was not talking about a killer.
Oh, okay.
Although he is trying to destroy our sense of smell recently.
Yeah, he's been farting a lot.
No, but yeah, talking about that, make sure you check out Hannah's story.
Right.
Very well done. Very sad. Very important listen if you have that time. We appreciate you listening. We'll be back on time next week. That is our challenge. That is our mission.
I feel like I need to
a Wednesday release.
Give the heads up to everybody. We'll tell you a few weeks before, but I'm getting some surgery at the end of the month. So I'm going to be out for a little bit. We will try and pre-record a bunch of episodes, but we will keep you updated because, yeah, I'll be out for at least 2 weeks. So, but we'll keep you posted. I'm fine. It's fine. Everything is going to be fine. You're stuck with me for the foreseeable future. So,
who, me or them?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Suckers.
Fuck. we'll pre-record, so it shouldn't be any more. And then after that, there might be some new developments.
We shall see.
We shall see. Yes, but everybody take care. Take care of each other.
Yeah.
Reach out. Reach
Love
out.
You all.
Just if you've got a friend you haven't spoken to who you know might be doing it tough, sometimes a message is all it takes. So, yeah, reach out.
Love you.
Take care of each other. Love yous all.
Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. Meow.